Before Barbara comes back up, I just want to tell one story. When she was talking about the planetary Pentecost, when Barbara was here 7 years ago, and we were doing Dhirmoto Merku's book, Religion in Exile, essentially what he was saying in that book is, quit trying to change or reform formal religion. Formal religion has seen its day, its purpose has been fulfilled, it needs to die with dignity and let what's emerging rise up. And that really hit me because there was something about the exclusivity that I was experiencing in Catholicism that was wanting to be freed. So Barbara, and I was looking for a larger context in which to understand my faith. So Barbara came in as a speaker, and the day that she spoke, something happened in the room. Of those of you who were there would remember, it was just incredible. And I remember the voice in my head saying, jump ship and swim over and get on her boat. But of course I knew I wasn't going to do that, but it had to do with that explosiveness of vision that she was bringing. And I went home and I really spent the week reflecting on what happened in that room. And I remember calling her, and this was before she had even used the word planetary Pentecost, and I said, Barbara, I think what happened in that room was a Pentecost. There you were speaking from your evolutionary perspective to us Catholics who were hearing through our Catholic ears, and we understood you. And this is, I think, what she's talking about. How do we find a language that is large enough to include everybody and bring it together? So Barbara has, for me, set that large vision and large context so that the roots that I have through my formal religious tradition can go deeper so that I can flourish more in the world. That's really what we want. So thank you, Barbara.
Alice, I'm reminded of an image you gave me when we started to work together. Is you said, I was in a pot, and I was growing these big shoots upward but didn't have the roots. And you were in a pot that had very deep roots, but not so big shoots. So we decided to just join in the pot. And what I really learned in evolving Catholic, in being participating with evolving Catholics, is that the deepest roots, I believe, of any story that has ever been told is the story of the birth of Christ, his life, his crucifixion, resurrection, and the whole story and the promise that we shall all be changed. I actually think it's the first true evolutionary story that has ever been written. And when I was asking a question of the universe, one of my deep questions is, what kind of person could handle all this new power? Who could handle biotech, nanotech, quantum computing, zero-point energy, nuclear, space travel, transformation of the genes, all of that? Who would know how to do that? Because it's happening. And it's mainly happening within the military corporate world. And then there are all these nice people over here that are having almost nothing to do with the guidance of the new power. So I had an experience of the Christ. And the deeper words were several of them. One was, when you love God above all else, your neighbor as yourself, yourself as me, a natural Christ, combined with science and technology, you will all be changed. Now there's a revelation. Because very rarely does anybody join high technology which is just beginning. It's the singularity with information intelligence and robotics and all is immense, particularly if you read Ray Kurzweil or any people like that. And it's not ever associated with the life and teachings of Christ. But what were the teachings of Christ? They were saying that you will, you know, when you are one with the Father, you and the Father are one, you will all be changed. What was that huge change that was being promised in there? It's a singularity of the highest order, I think. So, I forget what my point was. Oh, Alice in the Pot. Alice and I in the Pot. So what happened for me is I began to, through Alice, meet some evolving Catholic, and in particular Sister Judy Cauley, who has come to stay with me from time to time because she is a member of the Order of St. Joseph. And she is the one that took me to speak to the Catholic women, mainly the women, the sisters. And what I realized was that in the Catholic tradition, more than I think in the Protestant tradition, there is embedded the deepest insights as to the evolution of humanity, more than science, more than social change people, more than any kind of fundamentalists, that when you put together Teilhard de Chardin, Beatrice Brutot, Diarmuid O'Muircheartaigh, John Haut, Ilia Delio, the magnificent Franciscan sister, and what I said there at the Leadership Conference of Women Religious is that the Catholics are actually the greatest futurists in the world. Not only that, when you really go deeply into the gospel, as they do, as the evolving Catholic women do, the nuns, it's the new social agenda for love, for creativity, for balancing life on earth and social justice, the whole thing. And I said, it looks to me like this is where the evolutionary leadership is actually emerging. Wow. I mean, and they knew it. But it was nice to hear it from an outsider, to recognize the power of that evolving Catholic consciousness that is imbued with the story, with leadership towards the emergence of what's new. Isaiah, behold, I'm making all things new, who loves Teilhard de Chardin and is willing to deal with the Vatican. Whoa! I learned a tremendous amount from evolving Catholic women. And because I quoted all these books in my speech, my brother-in-law's son is Robert Ellsberg, who is the publisher of Orbis Press. And he was there at this leadership conference, and there was a rush on all the Catholic books I mentioned. And he said, I never thought of them as a category of evolutionary Catholics, and that you should put them, you know, frame them when you have a bookstore, as these are the advanced evolutionary Catholics who are helping evolve the world. And he said he would. And then when I was at last at the Casa, I was doing some talk there, and I said, if you could ever bring together the evolving Catholic theologians, women and men, to really express the potentiality for the conscious evolution of humanity, you could not possibly have a more powerful group. So at the Casa, they said, how do you think we'll get them all together? I said, I don't know, that's up to you, but I would really like to see it happen. And I'm going to be speaking with Ilia Delio at the Sisters of St. Joseph in April, and then I've been invited to all these convents. And one of them is on the theme of Jesus the future human. So I am going to get to share with Catholic women what I consider to be the growing edge of human conscious evolution. And so the pot, Alice, had the roots are going way down. They go back to the origin of creation, actually. And then now they're beginning to go up with different people being willing to participate. So I'm going to stop now because this is your time.
I want to just give a little incident out of my life. And that was, I was a nun for 20 years with the Ursulines. And in 1960 to 63, I was in Dallas, Texas. And we were passing Teilhard de Chardin books subversively from one to the other. And it was under the maybe sub rosa, almost silent, admonition of our superiors not to put them in a position of saying no or yes,
oh.
but to take the responsibility ourselves for, well, for reading Teilhard in 1961.
Wow. You see, there is an evolutionary process at work in all the more traditional religions. And I'm going to tell you one brief story. At this speech I gave at the leadership conference, when the Vatican, they had to make a decision whether to disband reform or what to do. And there was one man from the Vatican there. And one of the sisters said on the way out after my talk, "What did you think?" And he said, "It blew my mind." And she said, "Well, what did you really think?" He said, "It made me remember why I became a priest. Why I got to this position, because I had forgotten the feeling of this impulse that Barbara was so passionate about." And so far from being, but they were afraid I was a feminist. Far from being that, they didn't even know how to categorize me. I was called a heretic in the New York Times. Not that they knew about it. I mean, what they would know about being a heretic, I don't know. But it's hard because there are no labels for these things. Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Barbara, for your talk and how well you interwove it with the book that we're studying together. You invited us to respond about how we experience the oneness and the relationality, so I'd like to respond briefly to that. Teilhard de Chardin wrote a number of times about what he called the spirit of the earth, where we experience ourselves as the earth. And he said that the spirit of the earth is something that is not in us, we're in it. And I think it's both. It's in us as well. And as we discover it in one another, we discover the oneness in relationality. You mentioned also that the...
I just want to make sure I get that. Say that again, slowly.
Teilhard said that we are... The spirit of the earth is something that we are in.
We are in...
I'm adding, it's also within us.
Mm-hmm.
And as we discover one another and resonate with that, mm-hmm. we're discovering the oneness in relationality.
Yes, yes, I see.
Mm-hmm. And I wanted to add, if I may, your reference to the new Pentecost and the courage of the disciples. In the first Pentecost, it was a matter of other people discovering or understanding what one group of people, the disciples, were saying. The new Pentecost needs to be that we all understand each other, and including across whatever boundaries exist. I'm convinced that there's no future evolution unless we do discover one another. Mm-hmm. And I think we are beginning to do that. Therefore, we are in a new Pentecost.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we are in the days of the early church. And we need to have the courage of the disciples. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, I just want to make a little insight of one of the inspirations I had when I was doing my writing on the New Testament is that the phrase was that the world will be evolved by the new disciples of Christ who seek to work together for the planetary Pentecost. Isn't that nice? The new disciples of Christ who seek to work together for just what you were saying, Ernie, is it? Just what you were saying, for a planetary Pentecost where we're all sharing it from within. It's not about it. We are as it. And then that oneness is much more palpable. So I have always felt that I am a new disciple of Christ who's working together with anyone, anywhere, of any faith toward that. Thank you.
Barbara, I had just a moment ago an aha moment I want to share. And being a newbie, it's probably old news, but we'll see. The aha moment was the resurrection. The coming again of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always thinking of it from Christ down to earth. But what about we here becoming Christ, and Christ again is then here?
Well, I think that's the whole point of the second coming of Christ, is within enough of us to experience that love of the divine within us and for one another and for the earth and for the spirit of, you know, behold, I show you a mystery, for the idea, no, I will not become a power in this world. I will die and change my body. Wow. Whatever is true about that, that's what the story tells us. And when I really got that, I was also studying as a futurist in Washington, D.C. And I had been to the laboratory of biologists, and they have on the door, stamp out physical death. They're studying what causes death. And the cells have a certain number of reproductions that they do, and then they are programmed to stop. That's why we age. And these scientists were working on that program. Now, for better or worse, that's happening all over the place. And when I got the Behold, I Show You a Mystery, We Shall Not All Sleep, as a futurist, I realized we are all being changed. And I just want to re-say this idea of the Christ consciousness going into the new powers. Because the miracles of Christ that he did in the healings and the resurrection of like Lazarus, that sort of thing, actually is the growing edge of what we can do. But we have not imbued it with Christ consciousness. And it could be that the reason the human species has the intelligence to understand nature and create all this is in order to have a planetary Pentecost where the Christ awakens and we can heal, we can feed, we can house, we can make the world work for everybody. What if that's the truth? That would be the second coming alive. Yes, please.
Thank you, Barbara, for taking us along the pathway to the very edge again and again. You mentioned a little bit about biotechnology, media, etc. I'd love you to make a few comments on, say, Ray Kurzweil's work, what he thinks about, and how you see this linkage between artificial intelligence, our own intelligence, this connective matrix of potential intelligences.
Thank you for that question. Ray Kurzweil, one of the books that he has written is called The Singularity Is Near. And he gave it a date. I mean, I read this about maybe 10 years ago, but the date was by 2043, he says. He's been very good at predicting the increase of intelligence that doubles itself. The Moore's Law just keeps growing and growing. So by just projecting forward the increase of intelligence and the information systems mainly, that the intelligence that will be developed as the computers and the whole vast intelligence system become self-evolving, and self-correcting. And the singularity, according to Ray Kurzweil, is a moment when we have something as radically new as life was, or human life, would be intelligence that the biological humans created, but it so far transcends a certain type of our intelligence. And his view is that it's a very deeply philosophical and spiritual, but not so much Christian, but he feels that the purpose of life is to infuse matter with intelligence. And that the result of this singularity, if we can somehow align our higher intention with this enormous potential of intelligence that we have created, that we will be a planet that is making a contribution to the evolution of intelligence of the universe. And it's very likely that we're not the only planet out of these trillions of planets that have life. So his view is that the universe is going to be infused with intelligent life. And that our understanding of the singularity, instead of being shocked, horrified, and saying, I don't want anything to do with it, is to infuse it with love. That's what I would do with the singularity. And when you really study Ray Kurzweil, and I've met him a few times as a futurist, and he spoke here a while ago, is that he has a tremendous optimism that the spirit of creation itself is infusing this. And I feel if the evolutionary Catholics really got hold of this, they could help guide it. And not just the Catholics, but the Catholics have the most evolutionary of all the theologies. They really do. That I would like to see the deeply spiritual evolutionary community guide the new powers toward life ever evolving. That's what I think is needed. Now, I know that will create dead silence here. Life, what would be life ever evolving? Well, if you go back to the origin of creation and you see the evolution of intelligent life, and you put us in that story and you see us increasing vast intelligence, as well as heart, as well as spirit wanting to connect. That's what we did in Birth 2012. It was not about technology, it was about love. And I mean, millions of people participated in it, even if nobody in this room knew about it. It actually happened. But it only happened among people of us who do internet and look on certain websites and stuff like that. It was very limited still. So I would like to see us open our minds to the reason we have the crisis is that it's an evolutionary driver that is essential for us to evolve. That the reason we have this awakening of spirit is to connect heart with heart, center with center. And the reason we have all these radical new technologies, including the information technologies and biotechnologies and nanotechnologies, is that we are meant to be co-creators with the divine and have life ever evolving. Which would mean restoring the earth, freeing the people, exploring the universe. That's what it would mean. What do you think of that? I mean, how would you feel about that?
Thank you, Barbara. Barbara, I have a question. I like the whole concept. I believe in the whole concept and of the evolutionary Catholic guiding. It seems to me that there's a step in between that, that the evolutionary Catholic, that it has to be singular within the person, that all the baggage that is already in power, that that's still within the evolutionary Catholic. Mm-hmm. And what, how it is, to me, there's a step that I don't know what it is, but that it's missing. And I assume Don has had a lot of experience with that. But there is, as a Catholic background, there is an amount of healing mm-hmm. that has to be done, even if you believe evolutionary.
before that can be an influence.
I totally agree, Ginny, and I don't think it's only the evolutionary Catholics that need it. It's everybody. Because my own view is we're evolving our species from the phase of self-consciousness, separation, and the whole period of the structure of civilization is top-down dominance structures, every one of them. The nation-state, the organized religion, the universities, the global corporations, it's all top-down. And they did build civilization, but it got to the point where civilization itself could collapse if we didn't learn social synergy and co-creativity. And so spirit is arising in people of all kinds everywhere. And there's huge numbers of teachings out there. One of the ones I've been working on is in my book, Emergence, is the shift from ego to essence. If you are identified with your egoic self, there's no way you can do all this. But it also creates stress in you. It creates illness. It creates all of that. So how do you shift from ego to essence? It's the practice of self-evolution. So I really want to be clear that I feel the self-evolution piece of this, without that, none of this can happen. However, the timing on the planet is such that we don't have generations to improve our inner being. We seem to be needed to tune in to spirit and to express ourselves in our whatever form of expression we're called to at the same time. Not wait till I get myself fully whole and then I'll do something. It appears to me that when you are in the process, let's say shifting from ego to essence, that you are also tapping into soul purpose, because that's what your essence is. So you join creativity with spirituality. And I'm teaching a class called Agents of Conscious Evolution, and I have about 4,000 students out there that I've been teaching on internet. If any of you are interested, you could possibly enroll. You would love it. It is wonderful because we're going through all of this. I do it for an hour, and then people speak with each other in small groups for the next hour. And then they have homework of contemplation, meditation, experience, writing on the Ning site, their own impulse. And it's one of the ways, one of many, many ways that are now being offered everywhere in the world for people to evolve on self-evolution. As well as there are enormous numbers of social innovations and projects, like Paul Hawken in the book Blessed Unrest, he said he could have a screen and start just listing all the organizations, and that screen would continue to unfold for day after day after day. There's so many people doing good works. So we have that good works, and we have the spiritual evolution and the personal growth, and all the mystics have come out of the monasteries. They've come out of the closet. They're in the global, they're in the military now, trying to train the military. They're in the corporate world, and they use different language. Spirit is out in the world now. So if you look at it from that point of view, I think we're an evolving species. And it's kind of a race against time as to whether the evolving aspect of ourselves is able to engage in a crisis that could lead to destruction or creation. And when you know that, you get really turned on with your own expression within it. And I really feel it's regenerative. Because I've asked, what is wrong with me? I mean, people say, okay, Barbara, you had a big event December 22nd. What? Aren't you finished? Why would you be doing something more? What's wrong with you? And I would think, what is wrong with me? Well, it seems to be the impulse of evolution has no age. When you say yes to it, what it does is it regenerates you. I'm convinced that this yes is regenerative. Because if I have any personal problem at all, it's too much energy. And how to make myself coherent with it. So, if anybody, is there anyone here who I would say describe how it feels when that impulse is in you and you say yes to it? On the personal level? Yes. Yes, over there. Yes, please. Yeah.
I've been experiencing this since my husband died, and it was such a beautiful, sacred passing between us. He was unconscious, but I knew he could hear me. Mm-hmm. And I won't go into that because it's too long to express. But since then, after the stress of caring for him and all, I really rested. Then things started opening up. On the last Sunday of December at church, we have sort of like a ceremony. People do it on their own. They can get up and go to a station and write down on a piece of flash paper what they want to get rid of, don't have anymore. Mine was anger and impatience. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote those down and I held it up. And ever since then, and my life has been changing. Because I was so low in energy afterwards. But then, now whenever I feel impatient or angry, I'm reminded right away, Mary Lou, you don't want to feel that way.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I attended La Casa a couple weekends ago when Wayne Muller was there. And I realized I went to the labyrinth and put an empty cup in the center. Empty. And I couldn't leave La Casa without going back and doing the labyrinth and realizing that cup was gone. It was filled with wood by somebody else. And I felt so full. I came home still feeling full. I found out about this at that retreat. And my life has been so full.
See, I can see it. I can feel it as you speak and the way your face is.
It's
that's deep self-evolution.
It is deep. It is mm-hmm. deep. And the church I go to has no creed. It's just principles. And they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. It was a breath of fresh air to me 15 years ago when I went there. And it's not the pastor or anything. It's just the whole spirit that's there.
Which church is that?
The Unitarian Universalist
oh, yeah.
in Ventura.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. In fact, I just finished reading the principles to myself here. This is the principles, what we're talking about.
It is. This is really common knowledge.
So thank you for letting me share.
Thank you very much. That was so beautiful, and you could feel it in you. Actually, this is not obscure, what I'm saying. I think the overlay of evolutionary potential is just contexting it in a slightly broader context rather than it being new.
I was going to speak about something else, but your question prompted a different thought. When I was invited once to speak at Word and Life, at first I was overwhelmed at the whole thought, and then I figured, oh, well, I'll just do my little homework and see what comes. And during the process of preparation, I became increasingly aware of a presence, an impulse that was excited and encouraging and playing along with me. As I had questions coming to my mind, I would just open books and the answers were there. It happened at increasing speed and increasing frequency. up to the moment of the day when I was to speak here, I was going to speak about an experience I had during, I go to an adult ed class, and the teacher was trained by Stan Grof in doing experiences in higher states of consciousness. And in one of those experiences, I had a deer that came to me, and it was licking me, and it snuggled up to me. And I've always wondered, what did it mean? And as I walked out of the house, I thought, gee, it would have been nice to know what that deer meant, you know. And then I thought, oh, I better go to the bathroom. And I went to the bathroom, grabbed a magazine. I do this. I have to have a magazine. And on the page where I opened it was a woman with a deer snuggled up to it.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And it was written underneath that the deer represented the spiritual life of the emerging spiritual life of the woman. So it was just amazing. I had the thought, and the answer was delivered to me within seconds. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's what the impulse feels like to me.
That's so beautiful. Thank you. Because Carl Jung identified the phenomenon of synchronicity.
Yes.
As one of the major forces in the universe, because the universe itself has a continual designing pattern toward, and when you get more sensitive to your own impulse, I've noticed that synchronicity speed up.
Oh, they sped up with me incredibly.
So if you're way down at the base of your own life journey, it doesn't happen very often, but if you keep on going and working this, then you start meeting it so fast.
Yeah, it was really
because it's the design of creation for us to evolve.
But I felt like God was excited by my own search, and when it got involved, he just couldn't wait to get his hands in there, you know.
That is a great way to put it. God was excited by your search. Yeah. God has an intention of creation to, otherwise God must have been excited enough to start this.
Yeah.
I mean, really, and so the excitement within us is God, excited toward expression of that brilliance and beauty and essence of each person.
Then I had a second question. Coming from a science angle, I read an article, and we studied it in this class in adult ed, about a new discovery that it was very depressing article labeled "The Sins of Our Grandfathers," how they can know now that genetically we get marked with whatever certain behavior, unhealthy behavior that our parents may have had before we were made. Well, I thought, if that's the case, why wouldn't we also be marked by our parents' spiritual consciousness, spiritual maturity, in which case there is hope that maybe kids are born with, can be born with a higher, how would I say, with starting at a higher level, where the actual awareness of our essence happens faster, because they are already imbued with this, and maybe literally genetically marked. So maybe that's what is contributing to this outburst of singularity, a younger generation who is kind of predisposed to a spiritual awakening earlier.
I think there's really no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And Buckminster Fuller pointed out that when you're born in the life cycle of the planet, if you're born, let's say, later, let's say somebody is only 18 as compared to 80, that person is born later in the life cycle of the planet. So you're a cell in the living body of the planet at a different scale, different life cycle of the planet. And all of that is connected in a global intelligence process. So I think this is inevitably true. And it's also nice, if you're an elder of that, to join with the younger ones at the threshold of the new. And sometimes I have the chance to meet, you know, a person, let's say 12. There's a young man who's just absolutely amazing. And he's an environmentalist at 12. He's been to Rio. He's, you know, talks to the United Nations. He's absolutely remarkable. And so we've done some interviews together. And one time we just held hands. and looked in each other's eyes, and I'm like 83 and he's 12. And it was without any doubt one continuous generation. One continuous generation toward what none of us have fully yet experienced. There are no elders on the other side of this jump to say this is how you do it. There's nobody standing there who's been through a planet overpopulating, polluting, and needing to shift like this. So we're it. Thank you. Okay.
I just, as a musician, I wanted to say I resonated to what you were saying, and there's a verse of a song, or just one verse I'd like to read to you and see what you think. It's called, How Can I Keep From Singing? And it begins, My life goes on in endless song, above life's lamentations. I hear the old but far off hymn that hails a new creation.
Oh, I love it. Yes, that's so beautiful. Yes. I think it's right on time, Alice. Yeah, look at that. It's exactly noon. Thanks, Alice.